I'd like to begin with a question today. Have you broken through? Have you broken through yet in your life to the all-in position where God wants you to be? We've been talking about that theme, all-in, throughout this year. It's our guiding theme for this school year. But I've observed, even though everybody's spiritual walk is a little bit different, for many of us, there's going to be a point of breakthrough. There's going to be a point of surrender when we step from a casual Christianity into a position of being all-in for God. And that might happen more than once even. But I believe, as I look at you today, I believe some of us here in this room are at a position, we're standing on the threshold. We're thinking and considering. We're looking through the gap in the door, looking at that all-in life that we've heard described and preached about these last couple of months. But we haven't yet taken that step through, a step of breakthrough. And I just want to encourage you this morning, if you will be all in to God's purpose and plan for you, God will be all in His divine intervention on your behalf. I don't know if you remember last week, I mentioned a man named Richard Harvey. We talked a little bit about his personal experience. Do you remember that? He lived a life characterized by remarkable answers to prayer. And we described one of those very surprising answers to prayer that he saw. And he was a preacher, an evangelist, a pastor, a school administrator, ministered in many ways throughout the world during his lifetime. But you know, he had a point of breakthrough in his young life. He was 19 years old, and he had come up in church. His father was a minister. His father was a pastor. He knew all about the Bible. He had his daily devotions. In fact, he had already seen some remarkable answers to prayer in his early life. But he did not want to give himself completely to God's plan and purpose. He knew that he was expected as a pastor's kid to go on into the ministry, but he didn't want to do it. The problem really was he knew too much about the ministry, if you understand what I mean. And as I read his book, his memoirs that I mentioned the other day, he said, "When I was young and we would sing the song in church, 'To the regions beyond I must go,' he would change the words around and he would sing, 'To the regions beyond, I'm expected to go.'" He didn't want to go. And people were praying for him. One person in particular, he testified, there was a woman who was a counselor at a Christian camp that he attended. And she said, "I will pray for you. I'll pray for you every day for a year." And as that Christian friend was praying, God brought a dramatic crisis into his life. He became very, very sick, to the point where he finally surrendered and he prayed and he said, "God, whatever you want, I will do it. I'm all in." And as he testified, his fever broke, his sickness was gone by the next day. But it was a step of breakthrough. And just to simplify, that's what I'm concerned about for each one of us here. You all know about the Bible. You know about God. You have your devotions. You have a good home church. You do the right things. You say the right things. I wonder, though, have you stepped through that position of breakthrough into all that God has for you? Are you all in? And if you can honestly say, "I am all in to God's purpose and plan for my life," well, He will be all in on your behalf. He will step in. He will break through. He will make a difference in your life. Now, Mark chapter 5 this morning, we've got the slides going there. That's helpful. Mark chapter 5, you can see our text for today. Here's a story of a woman who stepped through that position. She had an experience of breakthrough. And on this particular day that's described here, her life was never the same after that. Every day up to this point, she had woken up in the morning every single day. She had the same trial, the same plague, the same affliction, the same dark clouds hovering over her every single day until she met Jesus. And she broke through. I mean, she broke through literally, and she broke through spiritually, and her life was transformed after that. Well, let's pick up the story right here. Mark chapter 5 and verse 24, and I'm going to highlight three observations today, just three points. We're going to point out what you need to see in your life in order to go through that door, to step beyond that threshold, to experience that breakthrough life. There's three things that you will observe, three experiences you need to expect an impossibility in your life. You need to expect an obstacle, and then expect a miracle. Verse 24, "And Jesus went with him." Here's a story that's interrupted by another story. Mark is writing about a man named Jairus, and Jesus is walking with Jairus, the town of Capernaum. He's going to help this man and he's interrupted. Jesus went with him, verse 24, and notice the phrasing, much people followed him and thronged him. That's going to be a key feature in this story. Verse 25, and a certain woman, which had an issue of blood 12 years and had suffered many things of many physicians and had spent all that she had and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse. When she had heard of Jesus, she came in the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. Now let's pause and just point out, as you stand today on the verge of breaking through to that all in life, you need to first of all expect an impossibility. We're going to see here the woman's desperation is described in this passage. Mark, the gospel author, takes great pains, if I can state it that way, to highlight for us just how bad her situation was. You know this, your Bible college students. The gospel of Mark is the shortest of the four gospels. Mark's language, usually very terse, very forthright. He gets to the point, says what he has to say, and then he moves on. Just notice with me, please, verse 25, 26, 27. It's all one sentence. That is the longest single sentence in Mark's gospel. It's as if Mark's trying to tell us something. What is he trying to tell us? He's trying to tell us this woman's condition was not difficult. It was impossible. So let's reflect. Here's a woman who's described. She had an issue of blood. So she was sick. She had a physical condition. But this is far more than a common cold, far more than that typical flu that's going around. Something very, very distressing, very personal, very confusing, very upsetting. But there's more. Mark continues on this very long sentence, this long description. He says she's had this condition 12 years. Now I know what it is to be sick. I've been sick before. I've had some sicknesses hang on and linger. And I wonder, when is it ever going to end? I've never had a sickness 12 years. 12 years. But it gets worse. Why didn't she go to the doctor? Why didn't she see somebody about this? It says she's gone to the doctors. She's been to the physicians. She's seen everybody. Did she get some help? No. In fact, Mark says she didn't get help. She got what? She grew worse. And now she has no money left. She's in a position of impossibility. Even if somebody says to her, my friend, I've heard of a physician in the next town over. You just take some money over there. He's got the cure. He's dealt with this before. Even if she had heard of that kind of hopeful scenario, she had no money left. Mark has taken us with a spiritual highlighter, if you like. He's taken us from a position of difficulty as he highlights this woman's condition all the way down to impossibility. And friends, that's where we need to be. Somebody in here, you know that God's knocking on your door. He wants you to take a next step. He wants you to break through to that all-in position, and you feel that's very difficult. No, it's not. What is it? It's not difficult. It's impossible. It's where we need to be. Some of us are living a frustrated Christian life because we think it's very difficult. We haven't got to the position that this woman's in where Jesus is the only option. We talked to you a couple weeks ago, didn't we, about complaining. You know, complaining is a sign of living this kind of life. Everything's on my shoulders. I have no faith that God's big enough to handle the problems that keep on piling in. I can't turn it over to Him. I've got to carry these burdens. Living a life characterized by complaining, it's just evidence that you're living over here. You think what God's calling you to do is pretty difficult. It's not difficult. It's impossible. He's your only hope. Living a prayerless life. Life is not characterized by an atmosphere of constant talking to God, constant dependence upon Him, constant divine interventions in very, very small matters. Don't you love to see God step in and answer the small prayers in your life, the little things? You're not living in that atmosphere, though. You're living over here. It's up to me. This is going to be a rough day. It's going to be tough today. Very, very difficult. God's trying to tell you something. It's not going to be difficult. It's impossible. So where are you living? The only way you're going to break through. This is what I'm talking to you about this morning, breaking through to that all-in position. God has everything I am and everything I will be. All of my thoughts, hopes, and ambitions belong to Him. You've got to realize it's an impossible calling. Jesus is the answer. Jesus is the hope. Jesus will do it. Faithful is He that calleth us, who also will do it. And then you begin to recognize a certain kind of spiritual Christian maturity that looks at impossibilities actually as opportunities. And you look at the impossibility and you say, yeah, I've seen this before. This is about to get good. We're going to pray about this. We're going to see a miracle. Did you know the only way you can see a miracle is to face an impossibility first? Did you know that? Yeah. If it wasn't impossible, you wouldn't need faith. Where's the faith if there's no impossibility? The only way you can see a miracle in your life is to see an impossibility first. It's like Moses standing before the Red Sea, and there's the whole army of Egypt behind him, and he's stuck between the metaphorical rock and hard place. There he is. Wow. The Red Sea over there, the Egyptians over there, and he steps up and says to God's people, stand still. Today you will see the salvation of the Lord. He said, this is about to get good. You just stand right there and watch. You see what's going to happen. It's like Jesus saying, I know Lazarus is sick. We're going to stay right here and wait. And 3 days later, he goes to the tomb and he says, Lazarus, come forth. It's like our friend Caleb we've heard so much about. We are well able to take this land. Let's go up at once, he said. By God's grace, we can do it. Why don't we take those moments in our life day by day as opportunities rather than frustrations? My cousin was staying with me at our house. My cousin and his wife and his kids, we were getting together for breakfast. He was in town, and he's a photographer, so he's photographing a wedding. And they've got 3 boys, and we have 2 boys, so what a mix that was. We were, you know, in the morning getting ready for breakfast there, getting the kids together. And my cousin's wife says to me, oh, he had to leave. He had to leave the house early. He forgot one of his lenses at the public park where they were shooting the, you know, the wedding party and everything. This lens, apparently very valuable, cost over $1,000. And somehow just left it out in a public park. Oh, that sounds terrible, doesn't it? There's no way he's going to find that. So he had to go. He had to. And we were all just kind of thinking, boy, that's tough. And what can we do about it? We can't do anything. I said, why don't we pray about that? We got the kids together. We just prayed. It was probably 2 minutes later, she got a phone call. You wouldn't believe it. He just found it. Little things. I mean, that's not earth-shattering, is it? But it's important to somebody. If it's important to you, it's important to God. Why don't we take those moments and say, here's an opportunity to get a hold of God. Rather than, wow, I'm frustrated about this. I need to tell somebody how upset I am. And no, why don't you find a friend and pray? And a certain kind of Christian maturity expects impossibilities in your life because you know that's the only way you're ever going to see a miracle. Remember the fellow's memoirs was called 70 Years of Miracles. You could take the title. That means 70 years of impossibilities, doesn't it? And some of us want to see the miracles. We don't want to see the impossibilities, though. You got to expect an impossibility. This woman, she had become convinced there's no plan B for me. There's no option 2 or 3. There's no fallback plan. It's Jesus or nothing. She had an impossibility in her life. Number 2, expect an obstacle. Expect an obstacle. And I found this is true not only in the gospel stories as people experience miracles. We have about 45 different stories of miracles in the 4 gospels. And it seems to be a very common pattern that there's some obstacle standing in the way between the person who needs help and Jesus. And yet I found it's true not only in the gospels, but in our lives as well. Something gets in our way. Something getting between me and Jesus. Why is it that I would stand, so to speak, at the doorway of the all-in life and not go through? Why would anybody do that? There's something there. What is it? Something holding me back. Expect an obstacle. Let's talk about that. We'll go back to verse 27. We'll read a little bit more of the story. Verse 27, when she had heard of Jesus, she came in the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up. And she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned him about in the press and said, who touched my clothes? And his disciples said unto him, thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou, who touched me? Well, once again, I see in this story, as our friend Mark presents this story about Jesus, he's highlighting something for us. You see, so often repeated in this brief passage, the crowd, the multitude, much people thronging 6 times in this short passage. It's repeated and emphasized. This word thronging here is interesting. It's used only 2 times in the entire New Testament. And right here you see Mark chooses that word thronging, a word that is, well, it's exactly what it sounds like. It implies scores, hundreds of people pressing in upon somebody. Clearly that's a feature of this story. And this woman is determined. You see the woman's determination here. There's an obstacle getting in her way, but she said, nothing's holding me back. She had this disease, this sickness in her body. You know this, it was supposed to make her socially unclean. She was not supposed to be out among people. It was embarrassing, not only very frustrating to her personally, but she said, I don't care. I have to get to Jesus. He's over there. There's 100 people between me and him. I'm going to find a way. She was so determined. What holds us back? What are our excuses? The author C.S. Lewis said it in a humorous way. He said, in the time of Christ, people couldn't get to Jesus because of the press, small p. He said, in modern times, it's the press, capital P, that keeps us from seeing Jesus. It was meant to be a joke, but what about it? What about modern life? What's crowding in upon you, distracting your attention? The press, capital P, maybe we don't read newspapers anymore, but what distracts our attention? What do you turn to so quickly and instinctively before you turn to the Bible? What is it that you pick up, read, watch, look at in those spare moments that you find in between things? What is it that distracts your attention from Jesus? What's holding you back? In this case, very literally, there's a crowd of people. Sometimes it is people that holds us back. We're not willing to speak out. We're not willing to be the one. Somebody else is going to speak up and say, hey, this conversation's not right. This is not edifying. Let's tone this down. Somebody else will. Maybe. Somebody else's job. I won't do it. I'll look odd if I say something. That would be strange. Someone expresses a burden or concern. We don't want to be the one to say something spiritual. Well, I don't know if that person knows about the Bible. I don't know if that person knows the Lord. I can't say Jesus talking to that person. We self-censor, you know what I mean? He wouldn't understand if I talked to him about my personal devotions this morning. He wouldn't understand that. I wouldn't say anything about it. It's people. It's just fear of people. Some of you in here, you haven't walked an aisle at a service for a long time. You're telling yourself, I can just pray here in my seat. And amen, you can and you should. I'm glad you can. But why is it that we say things like that to ourselves? What is the motivation? What is behind that? I don't need to respond to the public invitation. I don't need to. Probably the person who's talking to himself about, I don't need to, is the one who really needs to. What is it that motivates us to not step up and stand out? Here's a woman, can you picture it in her mind, fighting her way? I don't know, some of you have had an opportunity to visit Israel and you've seen those ancient towns and cities. And it's not like Appleton Avenue out here. It's not a wide highway that they were walking along. It's a very, very, very narrow kind of a street. And buildings on both sides, probably a little wider than this, but not much. Years ago, I was able to visit Israel and Jerusalem somewhere. There's some old photographs. This was way before the time of cell phones and digital photography. But as I talk about it, I recall a certain picture photograph that I brought home from that trip. And it's somebody had taken a picture of me walking one of these old lanes in the city of Jerusalem. And just not a lot wider than this aisle right here. So picture that in your mind. Here's Jesus walking along, and everybody wants to see him. Everybody wants to hear from him. They're pressing in upon him to the point you can hardly even find which one is Jesus. And this is what she's got to fight through. And she doesn't care. She's going to get there no matter what anybody thinks. Can you just imagine her just grabbing hold of people and throwing them to the side? And he says, hey, aren't you the woman with the, hey, don't touch me, you know, and she doesn't care about any of that. She doesn't care what people think. It's now or never. She's going to get a hold of the Lord, or she knows her life is going to continue on the way it has been. And somebody in this chapel service needs to recognize, you don't get a hold of the Lord, your life is going to continue on the way it has been. You keep on doing the same thing and expect some change, it's not going to happen. Even in Bible college, we're concerned, what's somebody going to think about me? Somebody's going to have a lesser opinion of me. I won't be so popular or whatever. What do you want out of life? Everybody to think you're special or everybody to approve you? Is that what you're trying to get out of life? I'm asking you an honest question. Is this your aim in life? Is that your ambition? Everybody needs to like me. You're going to die and have that put on your tombstone. I didn't accomplish anything for the Lord, but people thought I was nice. I'm serious. I don't know how long you've got. None of us have long, though. What are you waiting for? This woman said, now or never. Here we go. Going to make it happen. Just far too concerned about what other people think. We're going to look odd, sound weird. My uncle is no longer living. He started a business. He started a lawn care business when he retired, and it makes me laugh because, you know, my aunts and uncles, they all got to retirement age, and they, with all their abilities, none of them had the ability to retire. They all started a new job or a new career. He came to retirement age and retired from his regular job and then started up a lawn care business. And his habit was, when he went to do somebody's lawn, he would talk to his customers and say, is there any need in your life I can pray with you about? These weren't church people. They weren't Christian people. Just people in the community. People were a little surprised by that, but, you know, they took him up on it. And before he'd cut the grass, he'd stand there on the lawn with his clients and have prayer. He died a couple years ago. And they said it was a result of Agent Orange that he had come into contact with in Vietnam. And he passed away. And at his funeral service in Tennessee, two people were saved at the funeral service. Those two people were people who were his clients of his lawn care business that he used to pray with on their lawn. But we want to go through life not making any waves. Don't upset anybody. Don't challenge anybody's perspective. Don't be too bold. These are the obstacles that stand in our way. We talked about the impossibility. We got to move in a spiritual sense from a position of, I'm going to struggle through life. I'll struggle into spiritual victory somehow or another, to the point where we realize, no, it's impossible. God's going to do it. It's Jesus or nothing. We got to recognize these obstacles in our life. There is something that's holding you back. And it's different for everybody. For this woman, it was pretty obvious what it was. It's different. It could be people, though. Could be simple as that. And then number three, expect to see Jesus. Expect to meet him. Expect his intervention. If you are all in to God's purpose and plan in your life, he will be all in to your life. He will divinely intervene. You could see a miracle. You know, I was preaching a few years ago, a different church, a different message, but touched on the theme of miracles. A man spoke to me after the service, and he said, I heard you talking about miracles. Are you sure you're a Baptist? That's what he said. He was very kind, very complimentary. He said, Baptists get nervous talking about miracles. Are you sure you're a Baptist? I said, I'm sure about that. Well, you can call it what you like. If the word miracle makes you nervous, call it something else. But I do not believe that God saved your eternal soul and changed your eternal destiny, and then after that expects you to continue to live this human life according to human expectations. God is going to intervene in your Christian life. And when you say, I am all in, my life is entirely his, he will take it, he will change it. Dynamic, divine things will happen in your life when you're willing to give it over to him and see what he can do with it. Expect to see a miracle. This woman's deliverance. Notice as we continue to read here, the final portion will wrap up verse 32. He looked round about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague. Wow. What a moment. Can you just imagine it? With all those hundreds of people standing around, just the two of them there, kind of isolated, so to speak, in the middle of a large, large crowd and having that conversation. She fell down before him. He said, Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. What a conversation. Can I ask you a few simple questions as we move toward wrapping this up today? What saved this woman? Was it her faith or was it Jesus' power? What saved her? Was it Jesus' power or was it her faith? What do you think? What would you say? Well, I think a thoughtful person would look at the text and say it had to be both. It had to be both. If she could do something for herself, she would have done it already. She had already tried every option. It was Jesus' power that saved her. But Jesus said explicit right here, your faith saved you. Okay? Keep that in mind. I'm going to ask you another question. How many people do you think touched Jesus on that day? This is a feature of the story that is very much highlighted by the way it's presented in the Bible. How many people do you think touched Jesus on that day? Do you know? Scores? Hundreds? We don't know exactly, but Mark points out quite a few. And in fact, not only Mark, but Jesus himself. He stops, he pauses, he highlights this very specifically for his disciples to hear, for this woman to hear. He said, Who touched me? Do you think Jesus didn't know? Of course he knew. He said, Who touched me? The disciples pointed out, Who touched you? Who didn't touch you? The whole entire town has touched you. Okay. How many people got help? One. Do you think Jesus had the power to help every single one of those people who touched him? He did. How many got help? The one who was desperate. She had faith. I mean, this woman, her plan seems a little suspicious. Can I talk to you about that for a second? What did she have to base this idea on? She said, if I could just touch his clothes, I'll be healed. Where did she get that idea from? I'm not familiar with the verse in Psalms or Genesis that says something like that. She had that idea, though. There's a principle here. God honors faith that honors him. And it says she came up behind him. And when he discovered who she was, she was scared and terrified and fell down. This woman was trying to sneak a miracle out of Jesus. You say, this woman does not look like she has great faith. Sometimes faith is just being desperate enough to know that you can do nothing and Jesus is going to have to do everything. Oh, this woman's a great illustration for you and me. If I asked you, do you have great faith? Probably everybody in here would say, I don't think so. I don't think so. I heard a story years ago. You know the evangelist, Bob Jones. Bob Jones Sr., the evangelist. He founded a Bible college many years ago. And at that time, financially, the Bible college was struggling. It was during the time of the Great Depression. And they had to pray their way through every week and month financially. They're about to close down their doors on so many occasions. And so the evangelist, Bob Jones, he was speaking and he was saying, people tell me I have great faith. He said, I assure you, I do not have great faith. But I act as if I do, and it amounts to the same thing. Well, that was what his way of putting it. Did this woman have great faith? You might read everything leading up to verse 34 and say, I don't know. I mean, that's an odd plan she had going on there. Not sure if she did, but Jesus said, your faith saved you. You've got something figured out that all the rest of these people in this crowd don't have figured out. And there's people every Sunday all over this nation who come into contact with Jesus and get no help at all. They haven't yet figured out how desperate their condition is. They haven't yet figured out how desperately they need Jesus. They're not intentional. There's people in this chapel setting right now who came here intentionally. I need the Lord. I need some help. There's some people who didn't. Some people right now who are hearing about Jesus, you're coming into contact with Jesus, it's making no difference. You're not in the position this woman was in. It's Jesus or nothing. I need him, or I've got no other hope. I just want to highlight the phrase, verse 34, Jesus said, go in peace. Literally, the expression is go into peace. Go out into your new life. A new day has dawned for you. A new door has swung wide open for you. Go into peace. And just imagine what every morning was like the next several mornings when she woke up in the morning and immediately assumed she had that sickness to deal with and then realized, no, I don't. It's gone. Was that a dream I had yesterday? She's pinching herself. No, it's gone. It's all gone. Wow. A new life of peace had opened up for her. And can I just draw the parallel? That's what I want for you. That's what God wants for you from this day forward, to go into that new life, to go into that all-in life. If you can be all-in for God's purpose and plan for you, He will be all-in in His divine intervention in your life. I'll just quickly mention this happened in the town of Capernaum. You know that later on Jesus cursed this town because of their unbelief. There's nothing there today except for a parking lot. A few old ruins. The town's gone. Oh, if only all the rest in that crowd could have had the faith the woman had. They had all the opportunity in the world. How'd you like to know, coming to the end of your life, what if one of these people in the crowd became a Christian later on and thought to himself, I cannot believe it. Jesus was right there. I was right there. I missed it. God honors faith that honors Him. We're here in Bible college. So often our intellectual achievements become a substitute for true spiritual walk with God. Don't allow that to happen to you. Don't ever become so smart that you can explain to people why the Bible doesn't mean what it says. Are you all in for God? If you are, He'll be all in for you. I told you about Richard Harvey. As a young man, he took a church. I told this story to another class the other day. He took a church, and he was preaching at this church. And one Sunday evening, apparently he got a little bit long-winded. Now, that happens sometimes. Some preachers, I'm told, they preach kind of long. They get a little long-winded. And the hour was drawing to a conclusion, and people were looking at the clock. I've heard that some people in some settings do this. As he was preaching on and on, people were turning around, looking at the clock. And he felt his theme was very important for people to hear. So just in the middle of his preaching, he just stopped and started praying. And he said, God, stop that clock. And it stopped. And he had everybody's attention. He said the altar was flooded that night. People came. He said after that incident, people began to come and visit the church from all over the community, all over the county. At one point, a couple weeks later, the janitor at the church wanted to replace the clock. It was still stopped just at that time. And he said, no, don't replace it, leave it. Well, that's his story. Are you going to end your life telling somebody else's stories? Somebody else who was all in for God and saw God's divine intervention? Is that how you're going to end your life? Somebody else's stories? Every single person in this room. In different ways, of course, but God wants to intervene on your behalf, but He needs to know that He's got all of you. 100%. You're totally committed.